Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting.
Oh, that was really interesting, mate, yeah.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Extra Inch podcast. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my psychic and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hey, hey.
And we're going to talk a little bit about the most recent Spurs games today, followed by lots of questions, because we put the call out for questions last night and got absolutely bombarded. Such is the case when Spurs aren't doing so well, I find. But we'll start off with the West Ham game, a 1-0 defeat. In my opinion, one of our most disappointing performances of the season. Bardi, how's it for you?
I went to the game, and it's always strange when you play these kind of derby games at 12:30 in the afternoon. The atmosphere is kind of flat. There isn't much kind of build up. It's still kind of almost like breakfast time. So it was flat, and I thought the team played a little flat. But saying that, we had opportunities in the first half, and it was almost like we tried to win it in 45 minutes. And then kind of after that, it was almost like the player's mind was elsewhere. And it was just like energy conservation mode. And if we'd got something out of the game, great. But otherwise, they weren't really bothered. I mean, I saw Dele pulling out of tackles. And there's one thing that you can never put at Dele, that he would bottle a tackle. But he did. He completely lifted his foot out of one. So it was a difficult game because they were up for it. And we obviously had our minds elsewhere.
I'm in total agreement that our minds were on the Ajax game in this match, and I think that was reflected also in the team selection. So, Nathan, what did you make of the team selection when you saw it first up?
Well, first I want to jump onto Dele, which is so my dad was at the game, and he has a very much a pitch side seat, and he said that he saw Dele limping a lot through the game, and he thinks he was playing through an injury. I think that's probably also extends to the Ajax game as well, which obviously we'll touch on later. But yeah, I just want to say that I think Dele's playing hurt at the moment, and that's why his performances are a bit off. I'm so just sick of this club whose sole existence is just to fuck with us at the end of our season when, like, we're in the Champions League semi-finals and they've got nothing else going on. Of course they beat us. Of course they care 100 times more about this game. I just despise West Ham and this fixture so much now.
But when the teams were announced and you saw both Ben Davis and Danny Rose in the lineup, were you thinking straight away, okay, Davis is playing left-sided centre-back in a back three, or did you go straight to Danny Rose is playing midfield again?
I think this is the one where I put out like 8 lineups because there were so many different shapes that this could be. I think, and again, we are able to look at this now from the perspective of the Ajax game, I think you wanted to sort of experiment with the diamond again and Rose in midfield as a way of preparing that as a potential option against Ajax. And again, yeah, that sort of ties in with the sort of our minds are on the other game. And when you bring that also into your own tactical planning, when you use a Premier League fixture as a training session, my tone here isn't appropriate because, you know, of course we're prioritising the Champions League, but that sort of level of disrespect isn't the right words, although you should disrespect West Ham, but just sort of secondary prioritisation of this game, then it's likely to cost you.
Yeah, I got to say, there was a feeling amongst the crowd, especially in the South Stand and after the game, there was almost a little bit of anger towards how Spurs treated this match. That they disrespect. I mean, West Ham love beating us and they see us as a key rivalry. We, as a club, I don't think we see them as rivals, but as a fan base, we do. So I think it was a little bit disrespectful, the team we played, but I don't see where else they could have, how else we could have changed it. We have serious issues in midfield and we had to give Dier a start and we had to kind of rest Wanyama. And I think that was a problem. We tried to put Rose in midfield to give us a little bit of thrust, a little bit of almost like a Sissoko-ness to our centre midfield, but it didn't work and we were unable to control the game.
So we had a question from Jassam_89 on Twitter, who simply says, Foyth at right back? Bardi, what did you make of that decision to play Foyth once again? In fact, it wasn't even right back. It's and it was right back in this one, wasn't it? I was going to say it was a wing back role, but it was actually a right back role in this one. But what did you make of Foyth's selection and his performance there?
His selection confused me because I understood why he played him against Sterling, a bit more of a solid defender. He didn't want to risk Kyle Walker-Peters. But I think in this game, we should have played Kyle Walker-Peters. He just offers us more going forward. Foyth perhaps is the better footballer. But Walker-Peters knows his role. He's quite energetic. He's a fullback more than Foyth is. And I think Foyth limited us severely on that right-hand side.
And Nathan, when things started to go West Ham's way and obviously they took the lead, we didn't really have a plan B. The only option we did have was to throw on Vincent Janssen. So we ended the match with Vincent Janssen and Fernando Llorente as our dual strikers. What on earth did you make of that?
Well, I mean, you've sort of already said yourself in that that's essentially the only option we had. I don't know what else we really could have done. Obviously, in that situation, you want to just be throwing the crosses in and hoping for the best. But in bringing him on, we further lost our sort of control of the game and we weren't able to create that situation. We did get we got the last touch of the game, which was a shot from Janssen after Foyth. Wait, hang on, is that the right game? Shit.
Yeah, Foyth. Yeah. Foyth bustled his way down the wing.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. He did, yeah. So Foyth sort of finally sort of burst forwards. You know, he's got the skill, but he doesn't really have the pace that you would generally want from a right back. But yeah, he beats his man and puts in a lovely cross and Janssen sends it directly at the keeper with our last touch of the game. But otherwise, yeah, we weren't really supplying them. But again, we didn't have much choice, so I don't know. It's hard to say. Well, the problem with this is that this is the case, you know, when there's not really an alternative.
I mean, we could have buried the game in the first half. Sun had a couple of opportunities. Moura had one. I think Delhi had a kind of half chance. And had we taken that opportunities, then I think we would have just gone into kind of almost like battery saver mode, drop deep and just try to play the game out. But we didn't get it. And as the second half wore on, it was definitely a combination of not caring and then mixed with a desperation in the last 15 minutes with the dynamic duo up front.
We beat them on XG, as people love to hear. So Understat have it 1.35 for Spurs and 1 for West Ham.
So, okay, I mean, you could say in some senses we were a little unlucky not to come away with a draw then. And I suppose our last four games now have been 1-0 either way. So you could say that Pochettino has been a little unfortunate to have lost three of those, when actually perhaps he deserved a draw in two of them. But having put all of our eggs into the Ajax basket, we then had a really lacklustre start in that game. Nathan, I'll start with you because I think there's some tactical intrigue here. Firstly, what did you make of Ajax and what do you put our poor start down to in that match?
Ajax are so, so good, man. Like, obviously, I sort of went and did my research and watched all the Champions League games and all of that sort of stuff and went, wow, this team are amazing. And I sort of tried to get the message out about that. Not that, you know, Champions League semi-finalists need that little patronisation, but then when you see it in the flesh and you see them, you know, loading seven players into a 10-metre cube against your team and just tapping the ball back and forth, it's really like, oh my God, this team are incredible. So, like I wrote beforehand, the conversation around Ajax is always about the individuals. It's all about this, you know, this 20-year-old, wow, this guy's going to be really good. And less about the team as a whole. And I think that the fact that Ten Hag is sort of now a year into his management of the team means that they've gelled under his tactical ideals. And when you get that level of talent sort of actually performing above sort of just the sum of their numbers, you get a really incredible team. Their technical skill, it's just absurd, as you can see, with them just controlling the ball in a tiny bit of space between several of them. So yeah, I think our slow start is more down to Ajax's brilliance than sort of any sort of, you know, disinterest or fatigue or fear or anything else on our fault.
Buddy, where do you stand on that? What did you make of Ajax?
I thought Ajax were really good. The way they moved, you can see there's patterns to how they play. They're very familiar with each other and they have a belief. But I think large part of their brilliance was down to us. I think Pochettino's unwillingness to start Sissoko and all his doubts, obviously, about his fitness kind of surrendered midfield to them. And it was Wanyama just being chased around by a load of young men. It was quite disturbing to watch. And after they scored their first goal, me and those around me were kind of praying that we would just get to Amsterdam with something to play for. But then Vertonghen unfortunately got injured and we switched how we played. And then from then on, I don't think Ajax, apart from hitting the post on a counter, I don't think they were the same team. Sissoko was incredible at plugging gaps and closing them down. And from what I saw for the rest of that game, I go into the second leg with a little bit of confidence that we can win over there.
I think I'm definitely leaning more towards Bardi's view on this than Nathan's, actually. And I do appreciate that Ajax are a fantastic team with some fantastic individuals. And I think they were really well coached. And I'd actually say in the second half, they did sit back and soak up the pressure really well, knowing that we didn't have much to offer. And as a result, we created very little. But I thought our lack of assertiveness was the main problem. And like Bardi said, the absence of Sissoko had a huge impact on the game. And you saw that when he came on, it just totally changed everything. And I posted a sort of mini thread on Twitter looking at this and how he really changed the way we pressed with his own sort of single-mindedness and force of personality. And I thought Sissoko had a huge impact on our performance. And had he started, I think we could have got away with a 0-0 in this game. One thing I just think is worth talking about. Lots of people said that as soon as we switched from a back three to a back four, it made all the difference. And I would counter that. I think the problem was more in midfield. And actually, the changes we made in midfield with Sissoko coming on and essentially taking the place of Dele, I suppose, in the three, was more important, in my opinion, than moving from a back three to a back four shape. I thought the personnel and the shape of the midfield was the crucial element. And Wanyama, like Bardi said, had a really, really bad game. And he is just struggling with his mobility now. He's clearly not a bad footballer. When he gets the ball, he looks okay, actually. And he's willing to actually take players on and he's playing some reasonable passes. But mobility-wise, he is an absolute shadow of his former self. And it's very sad to watch. And I think in that second game next week, we have to play Eric Dier in midfield. I just think he's a more safe bet than Wanyama. And I think it's vital that we start with a tighter midfield three. Pochettino did another kind of classic Pochettino thing, which was to take a calculated gamble. He made sure that Dele and Eriksen were taking turns to press really, really high against Ajax, but when they beat the press, it left us so exposed, and so Wanyama's flaws were highlighted to an even greater degree than they might have been otherwise.
Yeah, but I just want to step in on the Eric Dier, sure, Wanyama thing, because at the West Ham game, he was the problem with Eric Dier is he spent the last two seasons chasing. He's always out of position, and the more he keeps getting injured, the less he's able to chase. And he's just at the moment, he's just this giant turnip that's constantly he's always in the wrong position. Wanyama, for all his faults, at least is in a position to make an interception or stop a pass or cut off a passing angle. Dier was, I mean, if you're constantly having to turn around and run after Mark Noble, then there's something fundamentally wrong with your positioning. And plus, I don't really like Dier's attitude at the moment. The way he constantly berates those other players around him when the fault is not their fault, or he's partly to blame as well. It's not really for me. And I said a while ago, I don't like him. And my disdain towards him is growing. And I would rather start with Wanyama than Dier.
Wow, that's a pretty harsh assessment of Dier there. But Nathan, where do you stand on Dier versus Wanyama for the second leg?
God, I think I think we want to start with a two-man midfield. I think we maybe want to be looking at a 4-2-3-1, which is matching them. Because, yeah, Wanyama's the better player, but his body is clearly not functioning like it used to. So it's close between them, and that's kind of a shame, because it shouldn't be. Because if you think about 2017, Wanyama was incredible. Yeah, it's just such a shame to be talking about Wanyama as sort of the shed of the player he was, and Dyer in a not entirely dissimilar situation either.
Very, very injury-disrupted seasons for both of them, and given how reliant we are on each with Winks being out, it's hugely problematic. We had a question from Dell, who is Dell_Carr on Twitter. He said, should we go balls out to get De Ligt? How good can this lad be? I think De Ligt is phenomenal for 19. I don't think I've seen a 19-year-old defender as good as he is in forever, to be honest. Bardi, how was he in the flesh?
He was good. I mean, he wasn't really tested. We didn't really have the firepower to like cause him issues. So yeah, he's fine. And from what I've seen, he looks good. I'm not gonna go crazy for him. I would like to give a little shout out to De Jong, who was incredible. I mean, I haven't seen a man pass a ball 10 yards and then sprint 10 meters to go get it back and then constantly moving. He's just incredible. He's an amazing player, and it was the reason why I love the Champions League is the privilege to go and see some of these top class players, and he was incredible. De Ligt, I mean, he was up against Llorente. I'm pretty sure Llorente would make me look like a decent centre back. I mean, Daley Blind was hardly tested, and he's not the greatest centre back either.
How about you, Nathan? Where are you with De Ligt? How good do you think he is and can be?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's already incredible. So the first time I saw De Ligt was the Europa League final when he was 17. And I thought, oh my God, this centre-back who's a kid can really like play on the ball. And sort of kept my eye on him and thought, okay, yeah, but also as you would sort of expect for a 17-year-old who at the time didn't weigh all that much. He's not great in the air and he can be bullied off it. But already by the age of 19, he's, you know, a physical specimen, and he commands his area and he wins all his aerial duels. So he is by far and away the best young defender in the world. And I think he can go on eventually to become the best defender in the world. And by that, I think he's probably already out of our price range.
Yeah, I think so as well. I would love to have seen Kane up against him. I think Kane would have given him a proper test. But yeah, I mean, I agree with everything Nathan says. For a young boy, he's got something. He's definitely going to become a world star.
Sorry, Wendy. While we're sort of shopping against the team who we're currently up against us in the Champions League semi-final, Ziyech is definitely a player who we should be looking at. I would also be looking at Onana, the goalkeeper, who obviously spent a lot of time wasting and got on some Spurs fans' nerves. But I love the way his physical confidence, his ability on the ball, his commanding of the area is great. I'm not really a goalkeeper guy, but maybe Bardi has some thoughts. But I was really impressed with him. Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, I love Onana. It's been a while that he's popped up every now and then on these scouting reports, and I've had a look at him. I think he's a beautiful goalkeeper. I love the way he plays so high up the pitch. His feet are good. His shot stopping's good. We swung a lot of balls in at him, and he's got a good old leap, and he's got safe hands. I really like the look of him, and he time wasted. It's a good bit of shithouse, and why not? I thought Van der Beek was amazing. There was one flick he did. It ended up being an offside pass, but he flicked it round the corner behind him through to, I can't remember who he flicked it through to, but it was almost like a Glenn Hoddle moment. He's a great player. And his goal, it was the goal he scored, he was directly in front of me and he stopped. And I'm not lying to you, the whole world just seemed to kind of like pause for that moment. And he looked, and it was a simple finish. A normal footballer should have scored it, but he had this effect on the stadium where everybody just stopped breathing, and then he went poof, in the back of the net. So calm, and I really liked the cut of his jib.
Yeah, you're so right. He took it absolutely expertly from the moment he received the ball. I mean, his touch was great. The little dummy was great, and the finish was great. But the defending from Spurs was absolutely abysmal.
Of course,
absolutely abysmal. And I've gone into that in a bit of detail again in my thread on Twitter. So we think Ajax are good. We think Spurs were bad. What's going to happen in the second? I've got quite a positive feeling that with Son back in the team, this is a very different game. Bardi, what do you think is going to happen? Can we still progress?
Yeah, I think we can. We need to score two goals. We need to beat them 2-1. You know, if we get 2-1 win, we're through. I think we've got goals in us. I think Ajax might even score first. And I think as long as we the most important thing is we don't panic and we don't go all out immediately. Keep calm. It's two goals. We can score two goals and a little bit of luck and just one or two individual errors less than our normal kind of par levels of individual errors. And we go through.
And Nathan, you were saying you would match up to them in a 4-2-3-1, which is exactly what I've said also. Who gets the nod for you? So presumably Son is up front and Llorente's on the bench?
Yes, I think so. Yes. So I'm not absolutely glued to the 4-2-3-1. The diamond was working for us at least in the second half. The 4-2-3-1 is just sort of an idea that maybe we should be at least thinking about. I think that we somewhat have the tactical upper hand in that we were the better team in the second half. We'd sort of worked out a good idea of how to play against Ajax. Now, obviously, Ajax are going to make some tweaks and they're going to look at that themselves and they're going to change things around. So it's not like it will just be a continuation of the game from there on. But I do think we're in a good position tactically. And we'll have Son back. And not only that, but I think that if Sissoko doesn't play at the weekend, then hopefully he will be in a better shape. Because although, yes, he was definitely key in turning the game around, I feel like he was also playing through a bit of pain. So hopefully we'll be better off there.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So let's talk about the upcoming games. We're playing Bournemouth, then we're playing Ajax, then we're playing Everton. There's a lot of squad management required. You've suggested there, Nathan, that you think Sissoko may get a rest against Bournemouth. How do we manage that? What do we do in midfield to allow that to happen? Do you throw Oliver Skip in, given that Poch clearly hasn't shown faith in him so far?
I think so. It's so difficult because really these are all, like, we need to get a win from one of the two league games. And if we don't get it against Bournemouth and then we go out to Ajax, we're going to be in such a bad situation going into the Everton game. And Everton are tough to play against for us. And yet still, surely Champions League has got to be the priority. So it's tough. I think, yeah, Sissoko has got to sit out. I think probably Dele has got to sit out. And obviously Vertonghen, you know, he's out injured. I think you can rotate a couple. You can rotate those who are most in need. But otherwise, we will keep it fairly strong.
I mean, if Sissoko were to sit out, that like it is that both Dier and Wanyama would have to start, I think. And I don't really want to see that midfield. I really don't want to see that midfield. Bardi, how do you manage the squad in the next couple? I mean, one thing that's been noted from the team news pre-Bournemouth is that Serge Aurier is back in training and he's going to be ready for probably the Ajax game, in fact. What do we do?
I would give Skip a go because we're at this point of the season. We've got two games left and we kind of know the situation of Dier and Wanyama. We know what we've got. With Skip, I think there's still quite a bit to learn about him. So I would give Skip and Dier a go in this game, because just to rest Wanyama and Sissoko. I agree with Nathan. I don't want to go into a final day shootout with Everton, because I can just imagine the scenes on Sky, kind of jumping from one game to the next and the stress.
Jesus.
Can you imagine? Because there's nothing else. I mean, hopefully Liverpool lose the league this weekend. So, and then, yeah, I don't think I can deal with it. So beat Bournemouth, relax, Ajax, and then Everton is a free hit. You can do whatever you want. Hopefully it's a celebration because we're in the Champions League. If not, it's a celebration because semi-final, third, everything else. So I would go as big as possible against Bournemouth, and I would play Carl Walker-Peters.
Interesting. So this leads in nicely to our questions, and I'll start with the ones about the youth players. So we had three questions from people about youth teamers. James Epps said, am I way off base in believing that Oliver Skip could do better than Wanyama or Dier right now? Rob Baldino Magic said, is there any way Parrott is integrated into the first team squad next year? Don't see how we find an able deputy that isn't a youth player. And _Ryan_Davis said, why aren't we using Troy Parrott, Jack Rolls and the likes for bench fodder? We don't even put attacking options on our bench currently. So what's the harm in giving young players the bench chance when we desperately need help in attack? It clearly can't hurt. And if you don't mind, I'll just start off with a few comments about the integration of youth players, which I think has been an issue this season. And obviously I would say that with my youth team hat on, but I think it's more of a problem because we didn't sign anyone. So Pochettino is the manager of our club now, not just the coach. So you'd have to assume that he is therefore in complete control, has control over recruitment. And if he's turning players down, we're told that he turned Tielemans down in January, then that's because he believes he has a squad in place where he doesn't need to bring players in who he feels aren't necessarily going to improve the first team. Which is fine if you then, you know, integrate youth players to fill out the squad. The problem is he's got players like Skip and Walker-Peters who are on the edges of the first team squad but aren't giving substantial minutes and therefore aren't developing or growing. They're just, if anything, they're going backwards because they're not playing matches ever. They're not playing under 23 matches, they're not playing first team matches, so they are totally stagnating. And also the issue in that Skip and Walker-Peters is not enough to fluff out a squad so depleted by injury. So I think there are problems there, and I think the lack of integration of youngsters across the season has been hugely problematic. It's also going to lead to Jack Rolls leaving at the end of the season. I think Rolls, you know, there are many reasons why Pochettino might not like Rolls. He might have a terrible attitude. He might be an arsehole. He might not run enough. He might not have the right attitude in training. But his scoring record this season in the under-23s is magnificent, and he has a Dele-esque knack of arriving in the right place at the right time. He's now going to leave because he hasn't been given chances. That's a massive shame, and I think he could have actually added something to the bench for first team games. So I think all of the questions that people are asking are around the youth team players are kind of wrapped up in the same issue, which is Poch doesn't really want to integrate youth team players. They're kind of seen as a last resort unless they are absolutely exceptional or do something to impress him, whatever that might be. I don't know. I've spoken a lot there. Thoughts?
Okay, let me try and break some of these questions down. So Skip, yeah, I just by the fact that Skip isn't injured means that he can get about the pitch. I wouldn't mind seeing him against Bournemouth, but I'm not about to throw him into the Champions League either. It's sort of a difficult one. Maybe if he'd had a few more games, it'd be more in the conversation. I don't think that Skip is sort of a world beater by any means. I'm not sort of like blown away by him, but just as you said, the fact that we're so depleted, he definitely could have picked up some more minutes. He did pick up some earlier in the season when we were in a similar situation, so it's weird for him to have suddenly now not be getting them. Maybe it's a training thing, we don't know. Troy Parrott is still only 18, is that right?
17 and now
17
injured.
And now injured. So yeah, I mean, maybe next season. Obviously there's a general frustration, especially for you, Chris, and like I feel it too, obviously, but Parrott is young, and like, yeah, he doesn't need it. Like next season, maybe the season after, it's not a rush on his behalf, but generally there's a general problem rather than with Parrott. But yeah, when you're only attacking option on the bench, who asked that one? Ryan makes a really good point that when all you've got on the bench is Llorente and that's not working, you might as well give an 18-year-old or the number 10 who can't stop scoring goals in your youth team a run, you know, for 10 minutes at the end of the game.
For so many reasons, aside from the fact that they could have an impact on the first team, I think it shows them that there is a route to the first team from the scholarship they have at Spurs as well, which is a huge boost, I think. As well as Rolls leaving at the end of the season, we're probably going to lose the likes of Edwards, Onoma, possibly even Walker Peters, who, you know, he's nearly 22, or I think, is he 22 now, I think? And he's not played any football for the last 3 years, so he'd be mad to stick around.
I think now that essentially Foyth has taken over the third choice right back slot from him, I've been fairly optimistic with Walker Peters. I've been sort of going, well, okay, you know, he signed this new contract and he's always on the bench and Pochettino is always speaking well of him, so maybe he's just trying to be patient with him, and his time will come. And now, you know, a centre back who doesn't have the pace to get up and down the pitch is playing, you know, rotation over him. I just think, you know, fair enough. Go get some game time elsewhere, mate.
Yeah. And this is the thing. You've got to start thinking of it from the young players' perspectives rather than just the club's perspectives. And ultimately, this is not helping their careers. And I think a lot of them need to leave. I think Onoma's not highly rated amongst our fan base, and his leaving won't be met with any kind of disappointment. But I saw what Onoma was when he was 18, and I think it's a failure on Spurs' part not to have developed him up until this point, and it's a real pity there. Let's hope Parrott gets a couple of chances next year or is out on loan, because I do fear for him in the graveyard of what is a very poor system in the Premier League 2 for under-23s, where a lot of players just aren't coming out of it alive. It's problematic. But really good questions, and obviously I enjoyed the chance to speak about youth players as ever. We had a question also from Jackie Boy, who is Debaser92 on Twitter. He says, do you think Foyth could one day become a defensive midfielder? He's great on the ball, can dribble, and will have defensive instincts from playing at centre-back. Is it worth considering? Nathan, where are you on Foyth? What do you make of him in terms of his future position and what he's doing now?
As much as I've just spoken about my frustration with him overtaking Walker Peters, and essentially it's time to write Walker Peters' Tottenham future off because of that. On the flip side, it's generally good for Foyth to get game time at all, and I'm happy to see him be on the pitch, even though I don't think the right back is a great place for him. Generally, I like centre backs getting development time at full back because it means that they take up more adventurous positions and they get to carry the ball more, and that's just good for their development generally. Mm-hmm. We're not really talking about youth games here, we're talking about league games. And Foyth doesn't need to develop his skill on the ball. That's already where he's very strong. So it's good for him to get game time. I think that if he was going to be an option in defensive midfield, the time would have been any of the last couple of months, and he hasn't done. I also think that perhaps the Eric Dier situation has made Pochettino wary to play centre-backs in midfield because they might decide they like it too much.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting point and something I've thought of as well. Ultimately, I think Foyth is going to be a top-class centre-back, and so why would we play him anywhere else, I guess, is the point I would make. I think his ball playing is great, his anticipation and reading of the game is great, he's really proactive, which Poch loves, and he's a good dribbler, so he's perfect in a back three, very good in a back four where you have a defensive midfielder who can drop in, and I'm excited to see how he develops. Where are you with Foyth, buddy?
Yeah, I think there's some, you could draw some parallels here between Foyth and Dier, because under Pochettino, Dier started getting game time at right back and centre back. And then Dier wasn't pushed into midfield until the pre-season tour of the US. So he wasn't actually exposed to Premier League football as a centre mid until the start of his second season. So I guess you can kind of look at this as Foyth's kind of first season as part of a proper first team. So I think the summer tour of America or wherever else we go will give us an idea about whether or not Foyth will ever be played in midfield. I don't think Pochettino's kind of a little bit conservative. I don't think he would risk it now, but perhaps in the summer against in some friendlies, we'll see.
Where do you think he's going to end up though, Barty?
Probably at Hull.
You're not a big Foyth fan?
I like Foyth. I think he's got a lot of good qualities, and he'll be... I don't see him being a top-class centre-back. I see him being a very good centre-back, which is great for us.
Wow, I massively disagree with that. I just think all the signs are there. I think he's so good already, and I think he's going to get better. Very excited about him myself. Final question, which was a really good one from Daniel Platt, who is Voodoo Chopsticks on Twitter. He says, could we have used Dembele during this run-in, or do you think it would have just been a very expensive, not very good 300 minutes playing through injury? Nathan, you're a huge fan of Dembele. We've spoken so many times about what he offered to our midfield. Knowing what we know now, with 2020 hindsight, what should we have done in January? Should we have sold him, or should we have kept him?
I think that if we had Dembele available for this game, for the Ajax games, he'd probably have come in very useful. But I think that if we'd have had Dembele this whole time, and we'd have been trying to play this tragically unfit, bristle-hipped 31-year-old, then we probably wouldn't have developed Sissoko in the way we have. We probably wouldn't find these outside solutions in the way we have. And I think that our league form over the whole would have been worse during this time.
And Bardi, where do you stand on this one?
I mean, he would have been useful for 20, 30 minute cameos here and there. He would have got a lot of game time, but like Nathan says, it would have probably harmed Sissoko's improvement. But he's even broken, he's better than Dier is at the moment, and better than Wanyama is. So it's, you know, 2020 hindsight, I probably would have kept him.
I mean, the sad thing is, we probably just thought Winks would come back in and cover for all of what we were losing with Dembele going. But of course, we failed to manage Winks properly, and the latest injury he's had is as a result of overexposure to football. And if he'd been rested properly, then he might be fine at this point. In which case, had we had Dembele, Winks might have got some more appropriate games off.
Yeah, I think there was a Christmas period where Winks and Sissoko started every single game, and that wasn't sustainable. We couldn't have continued to do that. We needed a rotation option, which we didn't have, and Dembele, as broken as he is, would have given us that.
I was really surprised when I looked at the number of minutes that players have played this season, that Winks has played 2,651 minutes. So that's sort of 6 minutes fewer than Dele. And if I guessed how many minutes Winks had played, I'd have said something like 1,500, not 2,500. He really has played a lot more than you'd have expected for such an injury-prone player. And I think we've managed him quite poorly. Going on what Nathan said in terms of Dembele being important in the Ajax matches, I totally agree that he would have been really big in these games, and therefore probably worth keeping in hindsight just for these matches alone, because what these matches could do for us as a club will make a difference. But of course, we don't know how he would have been used in the matches leading up to these, and therefore we might not be in the Champions League semi-final anyway. So
yep,
it's a difficult one, and I think primarily it was a financial decision to sell Dembele at the point we did. We got an offer, his contract was running out, his injuries had hit. I see why they sold him. We did have more questions, but they were more about how we rebuild our squad this summer. And just so Javed Mofahedi and Busted Cop on Twitter are disappointed, we are going to be doing some special podcasts over the summer about this. So we'll use your questions then as a sort of launch point for those. But that's it for this time out. Thank you very much, guys. Good to talk to you. Fingers crossed for some positive results in the next couple of games. It's felt like a long season. I'm actually tired. I'm tired of this season. I'm sure the squad and management team are as well. But we'll be back soon to talk about, pull the pieces out of the Bournemouth, Ajax and Everton matches, I'm sure. So that's it for this time. If you want to follow us, you can do so on Twitter at @TheExtraInch, or you can email us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Feel free, if you wish, to leave us 5-star reviews on iTunes. That's always very helpful. And we'll be back soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.